This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lindsay's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was that his
Liz name? Mark.
Liz Mark. Mark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And we are back in the saddle for another great episode here of the Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. And Scott Criscola, how are you, sir? I think I've seen you like four times since we last recorded. Is that
I know, right? It's, yeah, after we, sometimes we go like none in like 10 months, but not really. JR, good to talk to you, my friend. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 375 of the Mothership, and as you and I just mentioned, 25 episodes now is very different than 25 episodes 2 years ago. 25 episodes 2 years ago was 2.5 weeks.
Yes.
Now it's like 2.5 years.
I know, right?
But welcome.
New world we live in.
It is a new world we live in. Plenty of great shows here at PlaceToBeNation.com. How are you? How was your weekend? I know you had a very festive Sunday.
Yes, very festive Sunday. Weekend was good. Mm-hmm. Weekend was good. What was Saturday? I don't remember Saturday. Oh, Saturday. I had the cowboy over here helping me prep the yard for Sunday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday was the big christening, so it was a lot of work. Yeah. I was exhausted, and my son was great. He did a great job. He did not cry, got through it, and then I think he punished us by waking up at like 4 o'clock this morning. So I've been going strong since around 4:30.
Well, we'll try and go at a brisk pace. Saturday was a normal Saturday. Yesterday, I was at City Field for this pretty fun Legends of Wrestling show sponsored by our friends, JR, Big Time Wrestling. Remember them?
Oh, yes.
Our pals.
Around.
Yeah, kicking around. It was from 3 to 7. 3 to 5 was like the festival. We met some guys. The big players were up in the suites. You had to pay extra for those. Ric Flair, Brett, Goldberg, those guys were up top. I met most of Aces and Eights, including Mr. Anderson. That was kind of cool.
Did he injure you?
He did not injure me. No, I didn't let him come near me and get bit by the bug. No. Doc Gallows is a very imposing guy when you're next to him, I have to say.
Mm.
A very imposing guy. Nux. And who else was there? Brodus Clay or Tyrus, whatever his name is now. Tyrus, I guess.
David Tyree
was there. Also, Ashley was there. She was actually doing commentary with Stryker. And then at 5 o'clock, they had a card, and I was actually on the field. I got the doctor as a birthday gift. We got the high-level seats. We actually stood on the field and watched the show. It was very, very cool.
How many matches were there?
There was 7 matches. Oh. The main event was Scott Steiner and
RBG. You said this thing was 3 to 7, and the festival was 3 to 5. So they squeezed 7 matches in 2 hours?
No, it actually was extended. They actually went to like 7:45. I was just about to say that. Yeah, The early matches, I don't remember the whole card off the top of my head, but I remember the opener was two tag teams of guys I never saw before. But the heel team was managed by our man, Johnny Fab.
Mm, very nice.
Cena Sr. was there, and I was yelling out, Kowloons! Everybody looked at me funny, but whatever. But speaking of Kowloons, JR, another one of our pals, Slick Wagner Brown, was there.
Yes.
And he actually remembered his gear this time.
Good for him.
He didn't have to wrestle in khakis like he did when we saw him 5 years ago or whatever it was.
Good old Wagner.
Yeah, and yeah, so it was a good time. And Greg the Hammer Valentine was there. He was managing the face team. Who else was there? Nasty Boys. Let me tell you something. Knobs, not look good. Sags doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, the Mr. Murray diet plan.
Yes, exactly. It's the yes, he was. I thought he ate Sags, but no, Sags looked pretty good. Demolition was there. They ran in on the match with the what was it? It was the Nasties against Anderson and Nux. That was the big mid-show like tag team main event. And yeah, Axe and Smash definitely also look look like they would be in 2015. The main event was Flair came out. I posted that on my Facebook page. I got to post it to the live chats. He did cut a little promo right before that tag match. And then the main event was Scott Steiner, who, and I got to give him credit, as much as he has all these tattoos now, he looks ridiculous. But the guy, let me tell you something, JR, nobody will pump up their heelness like he does. He was like barking at people. He was grabbing guys' cameras. He was awesome. And
Gallows, I think this is him. I mean, I don't think he's playing anything up.
No, I think it is him. But that's, I guess that's, yeah. I think he lives his life as a heel. He fought RVD, and Brett came out in RVD's corner. And then RVD won, and then he got double teamed by Steiner and Nux, or Steiner and Gallows. And then out came Goldberg to end the show. He speared, he actually speared Steiner, and he jackhammered Gallows. So I didn't think Goldberg would get involved physically. He looks like he's lost a little of his mass. He's not as big as he
I'm sure
had been in his days, but he's still in good shape. So yeah, so it was a fun little show. And it was, you know, not much in the way of vendors. It was one table that had like some $10 DVDs. I took a picture I showed you of
was there any listing of the shows ever held in Corpus Christi?
Nope. Oh, okay. I was pissed too. So I stood on top of
did you read it off to them?
And recited all of them.
Did you pass out frisbees like Lanny Poffo that had the Corpus Christi?
That had the cards.
Yes, shows on them?
Yes, it did. I had the Corpus Christi. Do you know how many matches were in Queens? Let me begin. So I pulled out Graham's book and I read all the high schools and gyms and armories and but there was a great Hart Foundation set. I thought of you. It was really good. It was expensive, but it was two of them and Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart signed it. It was very cool. So it was a good little show. It was a good little big time wrestling show. Big time/time/wrestling.com is their site.
I think this picture, Sinatra's summer wind playing as Armento's hair blows in the breeze while Ric Flair walks by.
What little bit of it there is. Yeah.
The summer wind. Eat a fucking hot dog.
Oh, God. But it was a good show, though. So we both had good
see Armento this weekend. I'm excited.
You are. You're going to see him on Sunday. Yes. We'll talk about that at the end of our show. But yes, okay. Third time in.
He's going to lap seat with me anytime he wants.
Six weeks. Yeah. All right, JR.
I won't even charge him.
Well, glad we. Yes. Well, you're going to be bringing in some pure gold with you.
I meant I wouldn't charge him for sitting on my lap. But yes, the food he'll have
to. No. But yeah, you and the cowboy will be bringing some pure gold with you to Money in the Bank. But anyway, talk more about that later. Tonight, as you mentioned, JR, it is Monday. Which means we are going to go in the big steel box known as the Vintage Vault. And speaking of arenas, I'm all excited, JR, because we're debuting new building, new state, new city, new everything tonight for the first time since 2003. We had a couple of them. So.
Oh, man. All right. I shouldn't have taken that NyQuil before. I should have saved it. Here we go.
Hey, what is going on here?
It's like that episode. It's like the movie Stripes where he goes, I should have drank all that cough syrup, which pretty much obviously did. Tonight. Inside the Vintage Vault, Destiny takes a detour. Tonight.
Scott's room.
Inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you Unforgiven 2004. Like most secondary shows in 2004, you probably forgot most of the card. We will help you with that this evening.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit. This is one I really don't think I've seen maybe once since... Like the week after it aired. That's probably the last time I saw it.
Yeah, probably.
So it was pretty new to me.
Mm. September 12th, 2004. Live from the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon. New state, new city.
That's where they grow all the Derrick Roses.
That's right. I wonder if the stems are as strong as his knees. That would not be good.
In the summer wind.
In the summer wind with a sausage peppers. First time we are in the Duck State or whatever the nickname of it is. Assuming it's the Duck
State. I'm pretty sure it's not the Duck State.
The Duck State because it's the University of Oregon. The Beaver State.
I guarantee you it is not the Duck State.
Why are they called Ducks then?
The Nike State. There's a lot of Ducks there, but I don't think it's the Duck State.
It should be. It's probably the Nike State. It's the Swoosh State because Phil Knight probably owns most of the property on it. So.
All right. I'll find out.
Okay. Obviously, a brand new arena. JR will let us know that momentarily. But yeah, according to our man Chad Campbell, the reason that the WWE had never been, I don't know about never, I'm sure they've had house shows and stuff, but never had a major show in the state of Oregon.
It is the Beaver State.
The Beaver.
Oregon
sorry.
State Beavers.
So I got the wrong state school. I thought the Ducks were better than the Beavers. But anyway.
Ducks.
Yeah. State. According to Chad Campbell, it was because
they love their duck sauce.
They do love their duck sauce. There are a lot of there was drug testing issues in the state of Oregon, so obviously they avoided it like the plague. And now either they were testing on their own or Oregon stopped caring. One or the other. So we are now in the Beaver State. Hashtag WCW. All right, JR, give us the history of this fine new building.
The Perfect
Actually,
Beaver.
It's not new at this point. Perfect Beaver.
The Moda Center is now called, formerly the Rose Garden Arena, opened in 1995, October 12th, 95. Flack and Kurtz Services Engineers, Drake and Drake, or Drake Turner was the general contractor, holds 19,441 for basketball, end stage 15,000, center stage about 20,500. Here are your tenants, the Portland Trailblazers were there from 1995 to the current day. Portland Winterhawks of the WHL, 95 till now. Portland Forest Dragons of the AFL played there for 2 years in the 90s. Portland Pythons of the WISL played there for a year. The Portland Fire of your WNBA played there from 2000 to 2002. The Portland Lumberjacks, JAX, of the NLL played there for a few years. And the Portland Thunder of the AFL have been there since 2014. The Duck Center.
That is true. The Duck Center. I remember hearing that when they changed to the Moda Center. Moda is like a healthcare company or something. I remember a lot of people were pissed off. They liked the Rose Garden. Who cares? But they liked the Rose Garden. Oh, saw Gazzo Sunday. Enjoying the day with Papa Gazzo on Sunday, huh?
He was. It's funny because we were sitting there, Roger, myself, and Don were talking, and also my dad just starts yelling, and he gets up and he's stomping around, and of course we find out it was as he finally gets his thoughts together. We were talking about Deflategate, but it was.
God,
it was pretty funny. He just started just yelling out of nowhere and just stormed off. I was like, oh well, there we go, now it's a party.
Yeah, but, you would have appreciated this. Got one of the engineers at work is a big Pats fan, and he showed me a picture. I guess his niece's graduation party, and she lives up in Mass. And Tom Brady actually showed up. I don't know who they knew, or if it was a surprise or something. And he was standing amongst a bunch of balloons. So of course, guy behind me who's a Jet fan turns and goes, "Oh, were those inflated properly?" So, did he do them himself? So anyway. I could just imagine your dad, flipping his plate in the air and going everywhere.
And just about what he did, honestly. It was we all looked up and Don was like, "Oh, that's my cue to leave." It was quite the scene there. So,
oh God, that's hilarious
as always.
So,
all right. So the Sutton notes here. Do you remember
attendance? Wait, attendance 10,000. No, that's right. Attendance 10,000. We don't have a buy rate. I don't think there's a pop. It probably isn't fantastic. I'm sure it's in the mid. 0.5, 0.6 probably. And your announcers still out in the catacombs. The voices of the Attitude Era still. Good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, even the Attitude Era is over. Our Sutton report, which he told me yesterday, is extensive. Worked his butt off. So.
Yeah, he did. It was James Kenna was banging the hammer against the wall, ready to go.
Yes.
Do you remember the tagline for the show, Scott?
Insane. Pain, Kane.
Yes, very good.
It was on the front of the DVD.
Etched in blood on the front of the DVD.
That's right.
Do you remember the song?
I don't remember the song. The band was Saliva.
Correct.
Survival of the something.
Survival of the Sickest.
The Sickest. Thank you.
Sponsored by?
Clearasil.
Yes. Look at you. You're on a roll.
I am. I remember that today. I thought Clearasil stopped being a sponsor like in 98.
Yeah.
Huh? Clearasil doing it in 04.
I didn't know there was still a product, let alone sponsoring Raw.
That's what I said. I was like,
who gets Zits anymore?
Zits.
That's such a 90s thing.
I was waiting for Karate Fighter to be the next.
Right?
I mean,
geez. People still get pimples?
I know. Don't they have that weird.
Besides Snitsky? Does someone else get pimples?
Yes.
Rey Mysterio. All right. World champion, Randy Orton, your Intercontinental champion is vacant. It's in abeyance. Mm-hmm.
It's an advance.
Stripped of the title on September 6th after suffering a groin injury. Two minutes into a match at a house show against Chris Jericho in Salt Lake City on 8/28. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about Edge and his injuries in a bit because I got some things to say about that.
Okay.
A lot of resistance, still your tag team champions. Trish Stratus, still your women's champ. Mm-hmm. Two wrestlers passed away in the month of September. I'm going to let you guess one of them. The second on September 26th is Mariana Kamloos. Age 35, lost her battle with breast cancer. Do you remember who she is?
Kamloos. That must be a real name. So obviously, no idea.
It was, I forgot her name. It was Beaver Cleavage's woman there. Mariana, was that her name?
Oh, his girlfriend.
Yeah, the one he beat.
The blonde.
Yeah.
She died? I didn't know that.
She died in 2004. Yeah, she died of breast cancer. So she was sick for about a year.
Wow, I totally
passed away. Was Mariana? Was that her name on? Hang
on? I think it was. Remember, then there was a storyline where he was beating her or whatever, and then they left the company, right?
Yes, she was in as Mariana, as Mrs. Cleavage. She was a mother, a manager, and then he beat her, and then she left, and then she died. She was also a bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
So she passed away. The other one, do you remember, is much more pertinent to wrestling history, much more infamous. And what may tip it off, Scott, is that we the RSV movie was filmed just weeks after the show, and we make reference to it.
It's one of two. I believe. Oh, yes, I do remember. It was the Big Boss Man.
Yes, very good.
Passed away. Yes, because we did it. He was the presided over the wedding of a lifetime. So there you go. Yeah.
He passed away at the age of 41. Died of a heart attack. Final match was 3 weeks before losing to Hacksaw Jim Duggan in a Royal Rumble 1990 rematch for the vacant IWA World Heavyweight Title at the IWA Japan 10th Anniversary Show, Yoyogi National Gymnasium on 8/31. So. We bid farewell to the Boss Man. On 9/15, Bret Hart married Chinzia Rota. I don't know if they're still, is he still married, Chinzia?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. That's the Italian girl, right? And then he moved to Italy?
Yes.
I think that's what it was. Yeah. No, I don't know if he's, I think he's living in Hawaii now or something. Okay. No, I don't think he's married to her anymore.
All right. TV by the numbers, Raw passed 589 episodes, Heat 315, TNA 114 weekly pay-per-views. On September 8th, TNA held their final weekly pay-per-view in the Nashville Fairgrounds at the Asylum, entitled A Date with Fate. Technically, it's 110 shows. It's four tapes specials.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a quick card. Frankie Kazarian and Jarrell Clark survived the Tag Team Battle Royal. Jarrell Clark and Mickey Batts defeated Michael Shane and Frankie Kazarian in an intergender six-person match. Eric Watts, Sonny Siaki, and Desire defeated Abyss, Alex Shelley, and Goldilocks. A lot of Desire tonight.
Yes.
Two out of three tables match. AJ Styles defeated Kid Cash. American Dream, Dusty Rhodes defeated Scott DeMore with Vince Russo as a special guest referee. Him and Jim Ross. NWA Tag Team Championship match, Elix Skipper and Chris Harris defeated the Naturals to capture the tag team titles. And for the NWA title, Jeff Jarrett retained over Jeff Hardy. And of course, they would start on Fox Sports Net shortly after that. When were they on the internet? Was that, do you remember, was that before or after? Did they go from the pay-per-views to the internet to Fox, or did they go Fox then the internet?
No, I think they went from Fox to the internet to Spike.
Okay,
yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
All right, Diva Watch. We've had three eliminations since SummerSlam. Michelle McCool was eliminated on August 16th, Maria Kanellis on August 30th, and Amy Weber on September 6th. So we'll talk more about that field in the coming weeks.
No, finish your point. I'm sorry. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
International Heat, Rodney Mack defeated Maven. Chuck Palumbo defeated Val Venus, which always rhymes with
penis.
Shelton Benjamin defeated Steven Richards. And on the Unforgiven Heat, Maven defeated Rodney Mack. And a quick honor of history note, H-O-N-O-U-R, of course, at Ring of Honor Glory by Honor 3, Mick Foley made his debut proclaiming that Ring of Honor stands for Ring of Hardcore and Jim Cornette made an announcement that the Midnight Express will reunion in Philadelphia. S-I-C.
They will reunion in Philadelphia. I see. What I was saying was, is if you really want to go through the full history of what is TNA, then of course join us every other week for Place to Be Nation's main event, because we have been extensively going over the history of Total Nonstop Action. So we're going year by year. So we have the last two episodes, not counting the specialty
year by year draft house show results. And
that's right.
And year by year.
Yep, the history of the. Impact, or what the hell was it called? The Asylum.
The history of Ben Morse's mental breakdowns.
Yes. All right. Let's dive in, JR.
Okay.
Our opener. Pretty awesome tag here. Been a long time since you played that. June?
Yeah,
like,
I guess.
Right? I guess not that long. June.
Yeah.
How do we get to this awesome tag match, JR?
We got here by having some build, and then we arrived and had the match. On 8/23,
right.
William Regal out-cheated Ric Flair to pick up a win in a singles match. The next week, Batista got revenge for his mentor by defeating Regal. Later that night, Chris Benoit defeated Flair. It was then determined that Benoit and Regal would join forces to battle Evolution at the pay-per-view, and of course, Regal still looking for revenge on behalf of Eugene. Benoit still pissed off about losing the title to Randy Orton, and Evolution back at SummerSlam as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense to join in forces. You know, we're starting to get... We've seen a little bit of it over the summer, but with Edge and a couple other guys, but we're really in Shelton Benjamin, and we're really starting to see kind of the coalition to take out Evolution really start to form. Benoit shunted to the opener, though. And we'll talk about in a minute if that was as bad as it seemed. Still a good feud, though, with the anti-Evolution stable. Regal looking for revenge. Batista's swagger continues to build. I like this push here for Regal, too. So even though it almost feels like a step back for Benoit, it feels like a nice step forward for Regal getting to get some rub.
Mm-hmm.
Batista's cocky early, gives Benoit an opening to try for the crossface. Regal's hot, works over Batista, hits a T-bone suplex, and hits some forearms to take control. I thought it was interesting seeing Batista get worked over a bit. It was kind of... different.
Yes.
They didn't go to Flair. Batista also had a swank red and gold combo on, which I liked.
Yes, I liked it a lot too. Definitely a good combo.
Flair gets dominated as well, gets pinballed between both men. Flair goes for an opening off a chop block on Regal, and then goes to work on the ankle, but Regal slips free and tags out. I thought it was cool seeing Regal back in these big feuds, like I mentioned. Very good theatrics and psychology early on. Batista finally slows him down by burying Regal in the corner. Regal tries to punch his way back out, but Flair and Batista double team and punish him with strikes. Flair gets a figure four, but Regal escapes Batista for the hot tag. Benoit rattles Flair with chops, hits a headbutt on Flair, but Flair dodges the sharpshooter. Benoit turns into a crossface. Batista deadlifts Benoit out of the crossface and spiked him, which was awesome. And then he hits a nasty spinebuster on Regal, who's bleeding from the mouth. Batista whiffs on a clothesline and tumbles into the crowd, and that allows Benoit to get the crossface on Flair for the win. I thought this was a really fun opener. I thought it was well-worked and well-structured. I thought it was a good win for Benoit and Regal. They kind of needed it. I like them as a team, and I thought they could have been big as a team in a division that's kind of really sagging, and two guys that, you know, probably deserve better that probably aren't going to get it right now. I thought them staying as a unit would have been good. Now, I don't remember if Regal, I don't think he gets hurt or misses any more time, because I know he's around in early 05, but he kind of disappears from this coalition against Evolution after this. So we'll talk about that. But what did you think of the match? And then I want to talk about Benoit.
The match was excellent. I mean, you had four hard-hitting guys. I did like the psychology of Batista getting worked over, you know, still a little dues pay in there. And Regal, I think the best part about that was Regal and Benoit are two guys who could put that over and not us. And it wouldn't have been like, all right, well, they're just booking this. So Batista's, you know, getting some his chops busted. I mean, it's actually two guys who you can get away with it. And they worked their butts off, and crowd was pretty good. They would go up and down all night.
Yeah,
as the card would, I guess. But they were. It was a great match. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it was a really good opener.
I'm happy Benoit Regal won, and they most definitely could have been a a consistent tag team.
And not even just in the tag division, if you don't want to kind of bring them to that level. But I guess I'm just thinking more of keeping Regal up on the level and having him and Benoit regularly just kind of work together as friends would have been good. Not if they're an official tag team, but just team more.
And I didn't even remember that they won. I assumed they jobbed, so I was pretty surprised when they won. I'm watching it back.
Well, it's funny you said that. When we watched it, it was the second time in a week that I watched it, because you and I watched it last Saturday. We started watching it, and you said the same thing. Man, I can't believe it. I thought Benoit was going to lose this match. It was still a fantastic match, though, and they definitely could have been. Yeah, not, I mean, I'm not saying challenge La Rez or anything, unless you really wanted to, but just to kind of do some good fill and keep Benoit, you know, on camera, you know, and relevant.
Do you think him being in the opener is as kind of, you know, glaring deep push as it feels? Because on paper, it's like, oh, God, he went from main event to SummerSlam, and like 3 weeks later, he's in this opening tag. But I think when you look at, you know, he's still kind of getting pushed on that level. He's just kind of back to where he was, like a step below the big guys, which is a step back. But him being in the opener, to me, isn't him being in the opener. Because, you know, they position him as the alpha dog with Regal. And then, you know, Batista and Flair are pretty highly thought of. Evolution's still, like, the top heel stable.
Mm-hmm.
He looks good. They get a good win. So, I mean, if they were, like, in the opening match against, I don't know, like, whatever, La Rez or something, then I could see maybe complaints. But I'm kind of okay still. We'll see where it goes from here. But I'm kind of okay with him being in the spot right now.
No, I didn't think it was a demotion at all. Look, you got to put guys somewhere, and really, you couldn't put any other match on this card first, really. I think the only thing maybe you could have done was the ladder match for the IC title, which we'll talk about later. But other than that, can you name one other match on this card you really could have put in the opener? Not really. It fit perfectly. Hey, curtain right. jerking.
That's all relative.
Is curtain jerking overrated? I mean, come on. Everybody's got to wrestle somewhere. And don't forget, this is a...
Well, it's show-specific. It's a different day. I mean, like, in the 80s, I feel like, in maybe early 90s, on the house shows, curtain jerking's one thing where, you know, they'd build from the bottom up. Like, there was, you know, if you look at Dirty of House shows, and please don't, but if you do, from that time period, like Graham said or whatever, you could see the, you know, jobber versus jobber, jobber versus jobber to the stars, and then it would build from there. So I think that's more where the... You know, the idea always was, and you would always try and, you know, maybe get someone out there that the fans knew, the crowd knew, to kind of get them going. But I feel like once the Monday Night Wars started, that idea of curtain jerking kind of went away, because you started getting WCW trying to throw out hot, you know, cruiserweight matches to get the crowd really engaged. WWF would have guys, you know, even like Bret Hart, work a lot of openers to get the crowd going. Concept shows like King of the Ring and other tournaments, it, you know, didn't really matter. The Royal Rumble, we only have four matches. Like, curtain jerking wasn't as big a deal a lot of time. So I feel like that faded over time, and it became more about overall strategic match placement, because you could argue on many WWF or E cards, the slot before the main event is like the one that's the most disrespectful. You know what I mean? Like, that's where they stick the Diva match or the Heatless matches, is before the main event. So in the old days, you would say, oh, if you're on second from the top, that must mean you're in a good slot. And now it's more like, okay, you're only there to give the crowd a piss break before the big match.
Besides, for instance, back in January of 1980, there was not a Portland, Oregon show, but a Portland, Maine show, oh, JR. Yeah. And the opener was Hussein Arab and Johnny Rods.
Okay.
And the second match was Rene Goulet and our pal, the Sweeter, baby.
Was Hussein Iron Sheik?
Hussein Arab? No, that was Hussein. No, that was the Great Haas. No,
the great
that
Haas?
Was Hussein with an O. The Great Haas. There was only one Great Haas. Yes, you are a Haas. No, it was
the Great Charlie Haas.
The old Charlie Haas. No, that wasn't him. It was somebody else.
Okay.
No, this is Hussein with a U. I think his was Hussein with an O. And then the Wild Samoans against Mike Masters and Larry Zbysko. 17-minute match. Oh, and then building Ken Patera against Dominic DiNucci. And look at this one. Hulk Hogan and Tito Santana. And then the main event was Bobby Duncombe and Ivan Putski.
He was the great Hussein Arab. I think that was him. I think Graham just has it spelled wrong.
Well, maybe the spelling's wrong. Okay. So anyway, they were in Portland. So in that instance, you know. But
yeah, debuted in 1979 under that name. Won the first ever Battle Royal in MSG. Ren Michelle, Bob Backlund. Feuded with Jay Strongbow and Bruno before leaving in 1980. So.
Okay. And then he came back in probably 82, I think.
The Great Haas. All right, so we go backstage. So, Trish Stratus and Christian are arguing
over who Tyson Tomko will accompany to the ring. Tomko chooses Trish after we get a little bit of innuendo and some promises from Trish Stratus. Christian calls her a slut, and this is the final time Tomko will be lent to Trish as his backup because he will stick with Christian going forward. They make that very clear back here in this segment. So the splitting of the Christian Trish, they don't really leave on like bad terms. They just kind of, slowly break them apart a little bit here to have them work in different directions.
Well, and plus the Christian Jericho feud starts to reach its conclusion as well. So right. And Trish was the linchpin of that feud. So mm-hmm. If they're not feuding, then who really cares anymore?
Right.
And besides, I think Trish, not a knock on Christian, but I think Trish deserves to kind of have her own stage right. to do her own stuff from here.
And
on
it was
out.
Almost
she's
you know,
so good at it.
At the time, it seemed like they turned Trish to pair her with Christian as kind of his, manager or whatever. In a way, or whatever love interest, but it ended up being that they used Christian to just turn her heel and set her up as
right.
a heel run versus the other way around. So,
right.
But that brings us to our next match.
Yes, our next match, our first title match of the evening, the women's championship on the line. Your aforementioned champion, Trish Stratus, taking on former champion Victoria, who lost her title in a four way at Vengeance. And how did she get a rematch here, Jared?
This is how I went. Trish, back from her back injury, was here because on August 16th, Victoria defeated Gail Kim. After the match, Trish and Tyson Tomko attacked her. A mysterious man in drag came out to make the save. That mysterious man would again help Victoria 2 weeks later, and she teamed with Nydia to defeat Gail and Trish. Brought back memories of Raven's Ninja. Remember that angle?
in the day. Yes, 2000.
Trish back from her injury. Victoria do her title shot in this long simmering feud they've been teasing for a while. Because Victoria, they mentioned her as like number one contender for a while now. Waiting for Trish to get back. Tomko with Trish here, as we mentioned. Some basic offense. Trish works her over with kicks and chokes. Trish had some great heel swagger still in place. Victoria hits a nice press slam to pull Trish off the top and drop her with a gut buster in an impressive spot. Trish dumped to the floor. Tomko carries Trish away so Victoria can't follow up. Trish runs Victoria to the post, takes over using her stiff kicks to the midsection. And some pretty good Victoria selling here. Mm-hmm. Trish works some submissions, surfboard, a rear chin lock. Trish cuts the comeback with a nice spine buster, but then Victoria makes a hard-hitting comeback, hitting a swinging sidewalk slam for a near fall. Trish has some great selling in there as well. Victoria headbutts Trish down and dives onto Tomko, and then a Tomko distraction allows a Stratus faction for the win. I thought this was a very good women's match, well put together. Mm-hmm. Good selling, good offense by both. And, the hardcore match, the Survivor Series 02, kind of gets all the love. But I don't know. I thought this one's kind of close to it. I thought, and they didn't need the bells and whistles. Like, I think this shows how Trish has come even further than she did there. Like, that was like, oh, wow, this girl will do anything to make a match happen and put on a good fight. And now it's kind of like, wow, they don't even need weapons anymore to go out there and, we knew Victoria could work a bit, but to see Trish go out there and kind of lead a match as a heel and not need any bells and whistles and very little, a little bit of interference from Tomko, but not much else. And have a pretty good WWF women's match was, I thought, impressive.
And the best part about them both, JR, is that they're both different characters. You can really
disagree that is the best part about them, but anyway.
Well, the best part about the matches, I would say, the best part about them. The best part about them, never mind. At the Garden where you were in November of 02, Trish was the beloved babyface and Victoria was the nut job.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward ahead, Victoria's kind of this giggly, happy baby face, and, Trish is this evil slut.
Right.
So, but the matches are very different.
Yeah.
And I was, when I watched it today, I was like, wow, there's something about this so different. And they're working it, and Tomko was not overused. His presence didn't ruin the match any, or didn't need to lean on it. And I think that was a key. It gave the two girls a chance to really go out and fight. And, a little longer, just under 8.5 minutes, decent length for a women's match, longer than most women's matches are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they knew they were, with given the time, they could tell a good story, and they really did. And Victoria's just really good. She's good to work with in the ring. And now Trish, unlike 02, where she, Trish kind of leaned on her a little bit, no need here. I mean, both of them
right.
did a great job of handling their own business in the match. And, no surprise, Trish won. I mean, there's definitely a lot more mileage on her being champion. So, did you think at this point that like this was it for Victoria? She was pretty much, cooked.
No, because there was such a void
everywhere
else.
Yeah.
So
very different.
I didn't think she was gone. Maybe she'd take a step back, but
I mean, I think it's clear they still liked her a lot.
Mm.
It's like
yeah,
she got buried here.
Yeah, no, she didn't get buried at all. And, I mean, you still have Molly, and you still had some decent, some solid workers. And Lita, which we'll talk about in a moment, was not really in the division at the moment. So takes away from that. So there you go. Trish Stratus retains her women's championship with a very hard-fought win over Victoria. Yeah. But this segment is not over, JR, is it?
No. So after the match, Tomko comes in and starts choking Victoria, which is kind of made me even feel a little queasy when he did it. But and then a mystery woman that we talked about before, the woman in drag, shows up for the save. Tomko demands her to come down and finally be revealed. She comes back. The bell rings. Tomko yanks off the wig and clothes, revealed to be Stevie Richards. No surprise there. It's pretty much obvious and talked about openly. So the attack follows. The stripping is just like a just everything is just boring. So Tomko's just beating on him, rips his clothes off, and the crowd is just completely dead. Long and plodding and heatless. Tomko works a neck vise, something the match did not need at all. Stevie comes back with a testicular claw, but that was short-lived as Tomko finishes him with a neck breaker. And I thought this was brutally bad stuff. I thought it was the worst pay-per-view match we've seen on this show. I mean, on any of these shows in this year. And we saw some bad ones. I mean, I'd rather watch those Mordecai matches, all that shit yes. from SmackDown in the summer. Yeah. I thought was better than this. And I've, you know, it sucks because I like Stevie so much. He was, you know, such a great guest with us and seems like a nice guy. Really got his act together. And, it, you know, I feel bad dumping on him like this, but it really is, I think, one of the worst matches we've watched in doing these vintage vaults. And we've watched some dogs. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's like Uncle Elmer, Adrian Adonis level, whatever, but, which I actually liked better than this recent time we watched it. But, you know, whatever. There's been some bad ones we've watched. I don't know if this. Is much higher than those. It's pretty bad, and it's just boring and it's sloppy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I think Stevie talked about it with us too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he did. No, he did. He was skeptical too, but we told him we were fair about it. We were. I love that during the commentary, JR goes, "This is the worst kept secret around," and then Lawler goes, "Oh, JR, just go along with it." Because the crowd's chanting Stevie. It was like ridiculous.
It was a mess. I mean, they should have just done either just make it a fight and not a match. Or just make it a quick squash. But, I mean, it felt like just a time filler. And Tomko was still a bit green. So to see him just slowly meander through this beating with, you know, Stevie and drag was a death march. I mean, I don't know why they didn't at least even call for it to go home when they saw how bad it was dying. I mean, by the time Tomko locked on that neck vise, it was like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
and
it was
already.
Awful.
And it was,
yeah,
what,
it was awful.
You know, 6 minutes, it felt like 40. I mean, it was just, I think... If you had to offer me 6 minutes of this or 40 of the Triple H Shawn Michaels cell, I still think I knew
you were going to say that.
Well, I mean, I think I'm picking the cell over this. This is this is just tough to watch.
Yeah, it was tough to watch. Let's move on. All right, next up, our second title match of the evening, and we mentioned this match earlier. We mentioned these guys earlier because we have a vacant JR. We have a belt in abeyance. The Intercontinental Championship is in abeyance. Why, JR, is it in abeyance?
On 8/16, Chris Jericho won a tough match with Batista, and Edge came down after the match to tease helping Jericho, but instead just stood on the floor and watched Batista beat him down. A week later, a title match. Jericho had Edge on the ropes and looked primed to take his IC title, but Edge got DQ'd to end the match. After the bell, Edge planted Jericho with a spear. The next week, Jericho wanted a rematch for Unforgiven, but Edge came out on crutches and said he had a groin injury and could not compete. He didn't mind being unpopular, even in his own hometown, but he had already beaten Jericho at SummerSlam anyway. As they debated back and forth, Christian made his return from injury and beat Jericho down in the ring. The segment ended with Edge looking on in surprise while Christian smiled at him. On the 9/6 Raw, Jericho lost a match to Tomko after an assist from Christian. Earlier in the night, Eric Bischoff had stripped Edge of the title due to the groin injury, which was legitimate. Christian came out and said the peeps would riot the streets if the IC title was not handed to him. Instead, Bischoff suggested a match between him and Jericho proposed the latter stipulation. So Christian's back from that back injury that he suffered against Jericho in that cage match. Edge, hurt again, forced to forfeit the title. So this guy just legit made a glass since this injury. I mean, he was pretty, you know, pretty liable until that neck injury in 03. He didn't really miss any time. And now he does that, comes back, breaks his hand. Gets healed from that, comes back, tears his groin. It's like, what? I mean, can you trust him at all? And it's clear they're trying to push him. So they tried to push him as a major face on Raw, right? Feuding with Bischoff and doing the anti-authority. Mm-hmm. That was fading as the crowd was turning on him.
So they start to turn him heel, and the heel turns actually starting to work, right? So they're doing the whole, well, fuck the crowd, I'm a heel, I don't care. I mean, I'll do what I want, I don't care what the crowd says kind of thing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And
And the kind of typical easy heel thing, like, whatever, right. I don't care about you people anymore. Yeah.
Right. But, they, you know, it was working because they were booing him anyway. And they seemed to be heading in a good direction. A feud with him and Jericho probably could have been pretty good. Get Christian in the mix. And then he goes and tears his groin. And it's like any momentum he gets just keeps getting this, you know, stunted immediately.
Right.
And, you know, at this point, you think there was any inkling at all that... You know, was there any inkling at all that maybe they were just getting a little fed up with Edge? Or do you think they were with him in the long, for the long haul? Do you think there was, anyone ready to throw the towel in on this guy saying, all right, is he ever going to stay healthy? The crowd's turning on him. You know, did we misread his potential?
I think it was 50-50. I don't think they're ready to throw in the towel. I think they loved Edge. I mean, he was a soldier during the Attitude Era, but I'm sure they were thinking, you know, you gotta get healthy. We want to push you. We want you to be the future of Raw and a player in this company. But man, it can't be 2 months. Oh, I hurt myself. 3 months. Oh, I hurt myself. Can't do that. You gotta stay healthy.
Right.
So I'm sure they were frustrated.
And we see it a lot with guys now, where, you know, Daniel Bryan is an example, and others where they're hesitant to push them because, you know, can they trust him to stay healthy? And I'm just wondering if they were at that point here with Edge at all. And it doesn't seem like it because of how quickly he gets back, you know, gets back going afterwards. But
yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that they were probably a little frustrated. But at the same time, I don't think they gave up on him. I mean, the roster still had their share of decent mid-card guys that they could meander around while he got healthy. But yeah, I mean, there was no doubt that they were probably frustrated, but I don't think they were going to throw in the towel on him. I don't think so. I think that might be.
How about fans? You think fans were?
I think maybe that's where the boos are coming from.
Yeah.
I think that's where the boos are coming from. But to Edge's credit and to the company's credit, they used the boos eventually, and look what happened. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just patience. They had a lot going on in 2004 on Raw. They needed him because, as we've documented often throughout this calendar year, the work rate on Raw is a little shaky compared to the work rate on SmackDown.
Right.
But I don't know if they were. I don't think throwing in the towel, that might be a bit much. But I definitely think they were getting frustrated that, you know, we need you.
Right.
So enough of these.
Well,
little
he made
tweaky.
A big ballyhoo. He's out for a year. Makes this big comeback, and I was already been hurt twice since he came back. And now
right.
He had a, you know, they put the belt on him. The Andrew Orton's reign with him, and now they have to strip the title from him. So.
Yeah.
A tough spot to win the crowd back, but, you know, any two guys plus any kind of stipulation, this is the mix you want after that just awful death march. Christian back from injury, like we said, great pop for Jericho. I liked the green Christian tights here.
I did too.
One of 2004's best feuds reignited. I thought it was a good spot for it. Basic start with Christian taking Jericho down with strikes. Jericho breaks momentum with a big backdrop to the floor. Jericho gets the ladder, but Christian cuts him off and goes back to work. Jericho comes back, starts using the ladder as a spear. The fight spills into the crowd and then comes back to ringside. Jericho uses a camera cord to choke. Interesting work, I thought, so far. Very little ladder use amidst a lot of brawling. Christian hits the unprettier on the floor, and then we start getting the ladder bumps up in the ring. Jericho reverses a whip, and Christian eats the ladder. Christian regains control, slingshots Jericho up into the ladder again. The two start trading ladder offense. Jericho rides the ladder down into Christian's back. And I thought it was some good strategy attacking the rehab back of Christian. The crowd is really into Jericho here. Christian climbs the ladder with Jericho badly hurt. Jericho baits him by flipping him off and then gets Christian to climb down to come at him. Slower pace than most ladder matches, but it was a lot of stiff, nasty bumps and shots. Jericho gets knocked to the floor, but Christian's too banged up and takes too long to set up the ladder to climb. Jericho comes in, knocks the ladder down, leaves Christian hanging from the belts, and then drills him with the ladder and knocks him to the mat. They both fight up to the top, and Jericho hooks on the walls to Jericho on top of the ladder. And the crowd slowly realizes it pops. I like that. So they kind of didn't get what was happening. And then all of a sudden they realize what he was doing and they start going crazy. Christian falls back. Jericho's left hanging. He takes a nasty fall on the ladder when Christian pushes it over. He landed pretty hard on top of it. Second ladder comes out. They both fight on the ladders and then topple over. Jericho recovers, climbs, and wins. And I'm curious your take on this because that was a really brutal match. Like a lot of insane stiff bumps. It was fun to watch, but it made me kind of cringe a lot. I was very cringeworthy watching them. I thought it was good for Jericho to get the gold back. Christian has a hard-fought loss, and Jericho's the first 7-time IC champion here. But What did you think of the match as far as compared to other, you know, ladder matches of this level? Like, so not the big time main event ones, but, you know, the IC title level ones, which are majority of them. Because I feel like on the surface, if you're watching it, it didn't feel as hyped or maybe exciting. But when you really watch the bumps they're taking and how stiff it is, like, they're really beating the shit out of each other. And for a guy who just came back from a back injury, Christian really just kind of lets loose and goes at it. In 22 minutes, I mean, they just really bash each other with a ladder. They take some nasty spills on top of it. I thought it was a really grueling match.
It was definitely a different, and I wonder if that's what they were going for. It was definitely a very different ladder match. Slower paced. You're dealing with two guys who are high flyers, but they've gotten older, they seem to have kind of gotten out of the just throwing your body all over the place, and they seem to have kind of become more mature when handling ladder matches, a gimmick like this. So I definitely think that it was booked differently than ladder matches in the past and ladder matches that they've been in before. So I definitely think it was slower. I wouldn't say it was better or worse than a ladder match. I was entertained. It was very good. But I definitely think that they wanted to kind of amp down the chaos meter or the, you know, high flying sicko spot meter, and really wanted to continue to wrestle and have the ladder be almost like an incidental.
I kind of disagree with that
part of the match,
because I do feel like there were a lot of sick bumps, and like I feel like they weren't maybe high flying, but I still feel like they wrestled a match, or, you know, we talked about this before, how you wrestle the match and use the ladder kind of around it. I thought mm-hmm. they did a lot of spots of bumps based off the ladder, and they brawled a lot even without the ladder, but I don't think it was any kind of... I still feel like it was a spot fest. I just feel like it was a more brutal spot fest than we needed. I don't know. I mean, it was entertaining, but again, I cringed watching it, and I felt like maybe they could have had a just as an effective match, because everyone loves the both guys, that they didn't mm-hmm. need to take so many wild bumps off the ladder. And it felt to me like two guys that feel like they're being slighted and wanted to open some eyes. Like, that's what it felt like to me. Like, hey guys, we're still here. Look at us do crazy shit.
Mm.
So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good match, and God bless them. But part of me felt like it was just more than they needed to do in this spot to risk what they risked. Like, I feel like, and maybe it speaks to your point indirectly where you said, you know, they weren't doing like the spot fest match. Well, then what the fuck is the point of taking all the bumps? And I'm getting all the F-bombs in now because I can't use them Wednesday at will. What is the point? What is the point of taking all these bumps if they're not memorable high spots? Like, you know what I mean? And I think that speaks to why we maybe didn't remember this match that well, because it doesn't have those high spots. But to me, if you're not going to make them memorable, do we need 15 hard falls from the ladder when maybe two would suffice? I don't know. I just felt like they were going for a classic in the wrong spot.
They definitely use... Well, let's clarify that the ladder was used more as a weapon than using themselves... How do I word it? They were using the ladder more as a weapon to hit each other with than as a catalyst for a high spot to hit each other with, if that makes any sense. Instead of doing something where they were on the ladder and did something nuts, they actually hit each other with the ladder, too, which is more than you see in most ladder matches.
But see, I'm kind of okay with that, because that's kind of like the Shawn and Razor philosophy, right? Or even, was it, you know, the Benoit Jericho one was a bit like that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
This one, I felt like they wanted to go that way, and the first half was that way, and then they started just unloading a multitude of crazy bumps that just, I feel like they just weren't needed, that's all.
Mm.
I just feel like these guys didn't need to go that route. Like, that's like Hardy's Edge and Christian 1999. Hey, we gotta get people to notice us, we're gonna go out there and kill ourselves. I just feel like these two guys at this point in the career didn't need to have that kind of match, that's all.
They didn't.
And it was entertaining. It's not even bad. I liked it. I'm just saying I felt like they didn't need to kill themselves this time around.
No, I agree. All I'm saying is I think that the tone of the match seemed to be more grinding with a ladder than chucking themselves around with the ladder, but the premise is the same. I don't think they really needed to go that far. Right. I think they were trying to steal the show, considering what they thought the rest of the card was. But the IC title no longer in abeyance. Chris Jericho once again, your Intercontinental Champion. Were you bummed? Did you want Christian to win it? Did it matter?
Yeah, I mean, I was fine either way.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, obviously I liked Christian a lot. It would have been cool to see him win, but they kind of had to put it on Jericho because I think that's where they were headed maybe with the Edge feud a bit anyway. And as we'll see, it gets quickly bumped around anyway. So, but yeah, I think it was a good match. It was, you know, an anchor match for the show. The crowd liked it. They were really into it. It was good to see Jericho kind of get that win, put the feud to bed over Christian. Now we're kind of done with that. Mm-hmm. You know, Trish just split up. Jericho gets the final win, and we move on.
Right.
Makes me wonder if they were going to end that feud anyway if it wasn't for Edge's injury. Do you think they planned on going back to it, or do you think they were done?
With Edge's injury?
Right, so do you think it was only Edge's injury is the only reason they went back to Jericho Christian? Like, do you think they had a planned blow-off, or do you think that Raw cage match where Christian got hurt was always meant to be the final match, but because Edge got hurt, they were forced to have it again? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, probably. I mean, what else would they have done?
No, they would have done Edge. All right, this is what I'm saying. So the obvious plan was Edge Jericho, right? And Edge got hurt. So my point is, this feels like the blow-off to Jericho Christian. But do you think it was ever planned to be the blow-off? Or do you think they only did it because Edge got hurt? Like, do you think they only go back to the Jericho Christian well, or did they only do it because they were forced to?
No, I think they only did it because they were forced to.
Okay, I agree.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. I think they did it because they needed a spot and they needed an IC champion. So, and that goes back to the frustration with Edge. But again, I don't think they were ready to fire him. I just think they were like, come on, Edge. You know, you want to be a player, right? Well, you know, main event guys stay healthy. Well, like, they really do stay healthy. All right. But thanks to the injury and the serendipitous booking, Chris Jericho, once again, Intercontinental Champion. Mm-hmm. Why don't we take a break?
Okay.
When we come back, we've got, three matches left? Mm-hmm. Yes, three matches left, two more title matches, and of course our main event. But first, a group of words strung together with spaces in between. Because
the summer wind blows the hair right off our Mento's head.
With a sausage and peppers.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Favre, and Kelly, the Titans of Wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, tag teams back again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
Who the hell is CRZ? It's me, Christopher Robin Zerman. This is the Place to Be Nation podcast.
All right, it's a smooth night here on the Place to Be podcast, talking Armento's hair, talking a little Summer Wind by Frank Sinatra, Anthony Armento. That's this one goes out to you, standing on the bridge at Citi Field, hair blowing in the wind, looking wistfully out to the field where Ric Flair lights up Greg Valentine's chest with a chop. Anthony Armento, see you Sunday night. Right. PlaceNation.com.
Brought to you by Premio Sausage.
Yes. PlaceNation.com. All your summer win needs. Exile on Bad Street, Episode 7. New episode. Chris and Rob Naylor and Wes Hatch return to talk more about the indie scene of the 2000s. Exile on Bad Street just taking over the podcast world by storm. They have the awesome two-part volumes out there on the NWA and Jim Crockett Promotions in 88. And now we look at the Underground Kings, of course, all the talents of the 2000s indie scene. We talked about the promotions last time. Now we're back talking about the guys that competed in those promotions. The Hit Squad, Jason Cross, Teddy Hart, and many, many others. Also, had a new episode of Tag Teams back again. Guest host Pete joins Marty for a salute to Tommy Rogers, one of the legendary Fantastics who passed away last week. So they look at four matches from the canon of the Fantastics, and they talk about those and his career and life, so check that out. New episode of the Kings of Sport, looking at Sepp Blatter and the FIFA nonsense going on, looking at Dwayne Wade in Miami. And exciting news here for the Kings, Scott, because they are now on the Place to Be podcast feed. Nate is a good friend of ours, and him and Marcus have been around since day one, pretty much, with us. When we launched, they were almost immediately up on the site, and now you can actually get their shows through our feed as well. So Kings of Sport, be sure to check that out, our robust sports offering. Jason Greenhouse had his PTBN weekend playlist. We had our Seinfeld series rewatch continue with the Lip Reader, episode 6 of season 5. Hard Traveling Fanboys, the Long Book Hunters, looking at Batman, Earth 1, Volume 1. New episode of Main Event, Scott, talked about Corpus Christi Arena History. Elimination Chamber recap, looked at John Cena versus Kevin Owens, and more TNA history. Parvin Steven back with an All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 90s podcast, the All Japan Excite series number 8. And of course, Scott, we revisited King of the Ring 1994 in our Vintage Fault Refresh. And I do know that is the Rewind, PTBN Rewind podcast coming up next for June as well. So a lot going on, King of the Ring 94. King of the Ring in general. It's been a big King of the Ring a few weeks here at PlaceMeNation.com. But you and I looked back at the Art Donovan era with great pride. Aaron George presented a great alternative looking at last week's Ring of Honor television. 1995, the best summer of music ever, says Jason Greenhouse. He explains some reasons why and gives you some videos to watch to prove his point. New episode of the History of Wrestling podcast, dusted off the mothballs, Dan McGinn, Graham Cawthon, and Brad Stutz, looking at Elimination Chamber and the focus on the development of rising stars, elevating titles. And of course, they talked a lot about finishes because of the dusty finish that happened at Elimination Chamber. They kind of talk about different match finishes and what works and what doesn't. So it's a pretty interesting discussion. Yes. Of course, Brad is the booker of a promotion down in the Carolinas, so he had a lot to say about that as well. Brad Woodling had a great piece celebrating the second anniversary, which was on June 1st, 2015. Of course, Scott, was your birthday as well. Happy birthday. We haven't talked on air since then.
Thank you.
So we celebrated your birthday and the second anniversary of PTBN on that day, and Brad did a piece kind of talking about how we came about and then linked to some of our favorite pieces since we began. And so if you're new to the site and you're looking for some, you know, kind of a little sampling of all the different authors that we have here on the site and you want different selection of pieces to read to kill some time, all the links are right there for you. So bookmark that page, and when you get some time to kill, you can go back and relive through the history of PlacementNation.com. And also just want to talk about quickly last week's Kevin Kelly show. We had Steve Carino on. We talked about Destination America and Ring of Honor's new deal there. Kevin was very open and honest, answered all the questions we had for him, as did Steve. And then we did the usual accoutrement on top of that. So, big week coming this week. Of course, episode 2 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. Will and I will be back later this week. We're looking forward to doing that. And then some other stuff coming at you as well. So be sure to always visit PlaceToBeNation.com, the one stop for you in your pop culture world. Place Nation on Facebook, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, and Place Number 2 Be Nation on Twitter as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Nice job. Well done.
Thanks.
A lot of stuff going on there.
Blew in like the summer wind.
Yeah, the summer wind. All right. Let's get back into the Rose Garden, or the Moda Center, as it's called now. But back then, it was still the Rose Garden in Portland. By the way, yes, he played for the Blazers. This is during the crappy Blazers run, right? The mid-2000s. They were allegedly all like ex-cons and reprobates.
Yeah, I think that was the Joe Blazers era.
Yeah, the Joe Blazers. Yeah, because before that, the late 90s, when they went in there in 95 through like 2000, they were very, very good.
Yeah, well, right? That was when Pippen was there. And, yeah. Yeah. 99 was when they lost, I think it was 99. They lost a heartbreaker, right, to the Spurs when Elliott hit the three in the corner, that whole thing. And then lose to the Lakers, too?
2000, they lost game 7. They had a 15-point lead at the end of the third quarter, and then right. Shaq and Kobe went off in the fourth, and that was the first of the three-peat. But by this point, they were terrible. Anyway, as you mentioned, speaking of wearing red, brings us to our next match, and he's in it. And this one goes back quite a few months, JR.
Sure does, the old man. The feud goes all the way back to 6/14, the night after Bad Blood. Jim Ross moderated a face-to-face in the ring between Shawn Michaels and Triple H to get them to make amends and end their feud after Triple H had won the Hell in a Cell. As they're about to shake hands, Kane came out, smacked Michaels with a chair. He then crushed Shawn's throat with the chair, putting him on the shelf, and he was taken out in an ambulance. On 6/28, Jim Ross asked Kane why he attacked Michaels, and Kane said he was robbed of the world title of Bad Blood against Chris Benoit because of Michaels. I'm still not sure why. Fast forward to the 8:30 Raw, Kane announced that GM Eric Bischoff had given a wedding present to him and Lita. That present was that Kane could have any match he wanted at Unforgiven. Lita came out to inform Kane that since it was a present for both of them, she picked the opponent, and that would be Shawn Michaels in a no DQ match. On 8/16, the heel Divas threw a mock bridal shower for Lita, giving her presents like contraceptives and a big red machine dildo. In addition to a pic, kind of like the one you have with the game on it, in addition to the picture of a mutant baby. Later that night, Lita and Matt Hardy were able to cost Kane an IC title match against Edge. On 8/23, the demented wedding between Kane and Lita occurred. Despite a Matt Hardy run-in, Kane and Lita were officially wed per that hot SummerSlam stipulation that
yes.
forced Lita, because Matt Hardy lost a match, forced her to marry Kane. Still absurd.
Yes. Dildos. Good grief. I'm going to borrow this Kane one, Briscoe.
So we go backstage before the match, Scott. Kane torturing Lita. And says that, and then Lita says she hopes Michaels kicks his ass. So Michaels back from injury. Kane had put him out after Bad Blood, like we said. Now they're still married. Kane, pretty funny, I thought, as the angry sexist husband. That actually, in a way, as goofy and stupid as it was, I thought he actually worked in the role. Lita signed the open contract to get us here. Unique matchup. We haven't really seen this one before, I don't think, right? I don't think they've ever really crossed paths.
I know, because I mean, really, when he left in obviously when he left after 14, Kane was just starting. And
right. I mean, they kind
really
of worked
even,
in unison a bit at the Rumble, I guess, that year. But
yeah, but I mean, even since he's been back in 02,
well, Kane was a face for a while.
Yeah,
and then I mean, they didn't really cross paths in 03. And
then
here. So, yeah, I mean, this is really a real fresh matchup. Big pop for Michaels' return. Michaels fights off Kane early, knocks him to the floor with a flurry. Lots of energy from Shawn. Kane catches Shawn coming off the ropes with a thrust to the throat. Good psychology from the injury there. Kane uses power until Michaels knocks him back to the floor. Kane and Lita argue outside, and that allows Michaels to land on him with a plancha. Kane turns the tide on the floor, uses the barricade, and then a suplex through a table. Kane focuses back on the throat, choking away at Michaels. Kane comes back with a sidewalk slam for a near fall, and he goes to work on the neck with a vice and a tree slam. Michaels comes back with a DDT to buy himself some time, but Kane goes back in control, tosses Michaels to the floor, and we get more of an assault out there. They use the stairs. We get a Michaels blade job and turns the tide again using the post. Back inside, Kane drills Michaels with a boot to stop Sweet Chin Music. We get some good near falls and well-timed comebacks. Michaels blocks a choke slam with a low blow and then bashes Kane with a chair. You get a flurry of reversals leading to Sweet Chin Music for the win. I thought this was a really fun match. It was well worked. A lot of drama and teases. There was two vets just working a strong bout. I thought the Lita stuff was good too. It wasn't overbooked or dominant at all. It was just kind of blended in. And I mean, we've had three pretty good matches so far on the show. The opener, the ladder match, and now this. I mean, nothing's like crackling and taking that next step, but they're all really good. And this is a match on paper, you would think, oh, I mean, this is just a little bland. But Michaels really worked hard. Kane hung with him, and I thought they ended up with a pretty good match.
I agree. First of all, it's Sean, so you're never going to get a dog to begin with. It's just a question of what he can mold, you know, the clay with. And Kane at this point, perfect big man. I still can't figure out the logic of what Sean had to do with him losing to Benoit. Bad blood. I still can't figure that out. But, you know, if it led to a good match, then so be it. I was very violent. Sean continues to be an expert at selling just as much as he is at delivering. I think the highlight for me in terms of just funny was when Sean wins the match and he walks by Lita and, you know, kisses her hand or whatever and keeps walking. I think to myself, you know what? Sean probably has no idea who she even is.
Well, yeah. By the time, how about save her? It's up. See you later.
Yeah. Well, thanks. See you later. There you go. Yeah, it's like, wow, guys. Well, I'll see you later. Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah. You know, at least, you know, I hope to check out.
Yeah. God. So, but anyway, it was a fun match. Yeah.
This whole stipulation just still really friggin' bothers me for whatever reason.
It makes no sense. I didn't realize a wrestling promotion told you to marry.
It's like just someone just save her. Like, what are we doing? Why are we here? Why are they married? This is really confusing. It's just one of the dumbest stipulations ever.
It is absurd. I agree. It's a good word. Absurd. It's like clown. Yeah.
Hey, guys. Whoa, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
Oh, hey, guys. Well, you married to this guy. They forced you. He raped you and then forced you to marry him. Well, I beat him with a super kick. See you later.
See you later.
Like, real nice.
Bischoff will say it on Nitro.
Thanks, Mr. Friggin' Jesus Christian man over here. Like,
Jesus Christian.
Right? I mean, this whole thing is just born again Christian. Like, you know, praise the Lord. Oh, I just, you know, beat this guy who forced his wife to marry him based on a wrestling match stipulation because he knocked her up and he raped her. It's a fucking, thanks for the match. See ya.
Well, see ya. Super kick worked. Oh, can you divorce her now? I don't know. I'm not wrestling him again.
No, divorce is against the Catholic Church. Sorry. Sorry, Lita.
Take care of that baby. Need support.
Later. No abortion. See ya.
No, yeah. Rape gotta baby, have it.
You're forced.
Even though if it has, you know, red tights and Paul Bearer is your stepfather.
Thanks for granting me that match, though. I got revenge for you, Lita. This man, you know, forced you against your will, impregnated you, and forced you to marry him, like, you know, out of friggin' 1752 Amish country or whatever the fuck. You know, forced you to friggin' marry him, but whatever. Thanks for the match. We're even now. I pinned him with Sweet Chin Music. I showed him.
All right, Diesel. Very clickish.
Oh, God.
Oh, you want me to do more? Oh, that's going to cost you. It's like,
not even that. I mean, just, you know, they make it like they're even now. Oh, Kane lost this match. Okay. What the hell?
Yay. You're still going to treat me like crap, but yay, you lost. Like, is she standing there clapping, like all happy?
I know. All right.
I'm still going to have to go through this misery, but yay, you lost.
He's still going to go home and anger bang you, Lita. What the fuck? You're forced to take it. Ah, we showed you, Kane. Shawn Michaels beat you in 13 minutes. 18 minutes, whatever. I still have to have your rape baby.
I could just imagine Vince, oh, this house show was shitty. Christian Elo, I'm anger banging you now.
I mean, it's absurd. And the whole thing is so stupid.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Makes you long for the days of electrocuted testicles of Shane McMahon.
Exactly. Or of choppy choppy your pee pee. I mean, you know.
But I mean,
grief.
Everything around it has been okay. Just that I just can't get over that one stipulation that she was forced to marry him because Matt lost the match. Like, why even make that an option? Why make it an option? And then Sean just struts in, beats him on a match and leaves. You know, it's like
good old HBK.
It's like the dumb policeman who comes to the door, you know, and the woman's like hiding in the back or whatever. Oh, everything looks good here. See you later. It's like, yeah. The hell are you watching, Sean?
Her name's Del Hall. My name's Cop.
Jesus.
I mean, just ridiculous. Shawn Michaels wins. Just lead us still in this hell life.
Right. I mean, what's
the
Thanks, point?
Thanks, Shawn.
Stupid.
Oh, God.
Well, we got him, though. We really pulled one over on him here.
Woo! Pinned now him he's just going to be pissed off.
He didn't even injure him. He just pinned him with a super kick like everyone else, you know? Beat Flash Funk with the same freaking thing. You know, it's like, beat him with a super kick. All right. It's not like he
beat Sid with three of them, for God's sakes.
Well, it's not like he, like, busted up his throat and he didn't get any real revenge. Just beat him in a match.
Yeah. They beat the big guy with three of them. I only had to beat you with one of them. All right. Next up, we have our next title match of the evening, our last two matches, both for championships. The World Tag Team Championship on the line, your champions. La Résidence.
And then Rhino.
Taking on this kind of
Jerry, tied him up in the basement and forced him to team up with him. And Shawn Michaels came by and gave an autograph and left. This will make you feel better.
Yes, and then Rhino anger raped a Jerry. Oh, my God. Oh, JR, a little sports update here. The U.S. Women's National Team won their opening match, Women's World Cup. Beat Australia 3-1.
Good. So,
but how did this team come together?
You up on anything with Ted the movie? Are you up on that?
No, I need to see it though. It's on my Netflix list.
Have you seen the first one?
I gotta see.
Is that what you're saying? The first one you haven't
seen? No, I'm saying I gotta see. No, I gotta see the first one.
Right, I'm confused because in the second one they're doing the usual. It's like a different girl, but in the first one the whole story was about him, you know, getting back with Mila Kunis, and like that's the whole story, even more so than Ted. And now it's Amanda Seyfried or whatever her name is.
Yeah.
And it's not her. So I'm just, I haven't really read enough to know, like, is it supposed to be the same girl, but they just have a different actress? Or is he actually with the new girl? Or is it not even? Like, I'm just confused. That's all.
Well, it's kind of like James Bond, you know? Hey, I want the girl. Movie's over. All right.
No, he
like
didn't just want the girl.
All right, see you
the
later.
The movie's legitimately about, like, how they date and she wants to get married and then they finally get engaged. The whole story, it's more about them than Ted. You know what I mean? So it's just weird if she's just gone. So my guess is is it the same girl, or are they just like friends in this and they're not like a love interest?
I mean,
maybe
no
it's
idea.
That, you know?
No idea.
Maybe it's like Austin Powers.
We think about
three, where in the second one, he gets with Heather Graham, and the third one, he's just friends with Beyonce. There's a real romance between the two.
Or first into second, where he was with What's Her Face.
Right, but they're both
love
interests.
She turns into a cyborg.
Right, right. So then he gets with Heather Graham, and she's a love interest. But in the third one, they leave it open, like he may still be with her because him and Beyonce aren't, you know, they're not together.
Foxy Cleopatra.
Yes, that is friendly.
Right.
That is the co-workers.
Right. Anyway,
someone let me
Partners know. Partners in crime.
Whoever listens to this first and knows, let me know what's going on.
You still want to see Entourage, even with the...
Yeah, I don't care about ratings.
Kind of tepid
I don't know.
Reviews.
I've seen like two movies in the last 10 years that I actually get to go out and see, so... And I was trying to remember the last one. It was Dumb and Dumber was the last one I saw. So that was like November, I think. But we have tentative plans for a date night to go see Entourage in a few weeks because my wife really likes the show. Good. And I'm going in knowing what it is. See, to me, the people that are getting mad are somehow expecting like some, you know, great Shakespearean level play. It's going to be a long episode. Like, that's what it is. I mean, if you want to see, you know, Vince doing Vince things
that's
and
exactly
yelling at Lloyd, I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, that's what Entourage is, you know? It's nothing more than that. So why are people getting mad? Oh, you know, Vince is very vapid and everything works out. Yes, that was every fucking episode of the show. That's what it was. Was the show.
Yeah. What are you expecting? It's HBO.
I'm not going to watch a Seinfeld movie and, you know, think George is, you know, running for president and Kramer has this, you know, romantic relationship that's on the rocks. So, you know, I expect them to be on and be idiots and be assholes. That's, you know, I don't know why anyone expects anything more out of a movie from the show Entourage. It literally had zero of any sort of plot development ever. It was all just, you know, the same. Anyway.
I concur. I concur 100%.
So, La Résistance defeats Tajiri. Let's move on.
D'Lo Brown hits with a super kick and that's it. No. Did you see quickly, there was a, I think it was a Cadillac ad or whatever. It was an extended ad, and it was kind of a bridge to the beginning of the movie where Ari and his wife are in wherever the hell they were. Italy, right? Is that where they went at the end of the show? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
And he finds, like, this script or whatever, and he finally realizes, I need to work. I'm a workaholic and that kind of thing, and she lets him go. And apparently it's half car ad, half kind of bridge to what makes the sense of the movie. It's interesting.
Well, when did he... I know he got offered the studio head role, right? Does he turn it down at the end of the series, or do they leave it ambiguous? I forget.
No, the actual show ends with all of them leaving at the airport.
Well, I know that, but Ari's like away, and doesn't Dana call him and offer him the studio head job? And
I can't. No, not Dana. The other guy. What's his name? The guy that used to be the head of the studio.
Oh, he offers it? Why do you think it was Dana?
He offers it. No, it wasn't Dana. It was the guy. The guy that offered him. The guy that offered him the job that ended up going to Dana. He calls him again and says, "Do you want to be the head of Time Warner?"
Right. And does he take it, or do we leave it ambiguous? I forget.
It's ambiguous because it's after the credits. If you remember the finale, it's after the credits.
Okay, right.
And they're sitting on a villa or whatever, and she goes off swimming, or his wife, and he picks a phone up, and it's the guy. I don't remember his name. And he says, "You know, no, Dana still has, but I'm retiring. Do you want to be the CEO of Time Warner?" And then he just stares off into space, and then it goes to black.
Okay. That's what
so, yeah.
So he takes a job.
Yeah. Yes. So D'Lo Brown takes on Lowry's. Oh no, sorry. How did this team get together though, JR? Because that seems very random.
There's nothing. On August 16th, Rhino defeated Sylvain Garnier to earn the title shot here. Just kind of ECW buds, alums. Nothing else to do. It's kind of like the Holly Gunn. It's like the ECW version of the Billy Gunn and Hardcore Holly team. Those kind of angry veterans put together.
That's right.
So La Rez, their title reign's still pumping along. It's funny because they seem like such an 03 team. You almost forget how long they lasted as champions in a prominent role here in 04. But, it's a completely different unit. Different look, different tights, different guy.
Right. Yep.
Good heat, as usual, when they sing the national anthem. Rhino and Tajiri, fun throwback team, good chemistry. Tajiri and Sylvain work the mat to start. Series of counters ends with a tag to Conway and Tajiri controlling before tagging in Rhino. Conway's blonde hair is ridiculous here, by the way.
Yeah, it looked like really weird, like it wasn't real.
It was odd. It was really odd. It was odd. Looked at the Elsa wig that this Elsa lookalike had on. Conway hits an armbar takedown after regrouping. La Rez tag in and out, working the arm. Rhino reverses the armbar with a belly-to-belly into the tag. Crowd is very quiet here. La Rez double team into control into Jerry. Tajiri eventually uses kicks to break free and tag Rhino after lengthy control. Rhino has his usual energy, flying all around, beating on both men. Brawl breaks out. Sylvain gets crotched with the flagpole. Rhino hits the gore, but Conway makes a save. I thought that was a good tease. Sylvain bashes Rhino with the flagpole and steals the win. It was technically fine, but no heat at all. And La Rez gets the win and rolls on. I do think if there was some heat here with the way Rhino looked hot and hit that score, I almost would have liked to see them call an audible and switch the titles. They could always switch them back on Raw, but... Yeah, because the crowd was so dead, it didn't matter. But I think if it was ever a time, maybe if the crowd was like super hot, that would have been a cool time to do it because that was a really good near fall.
Yeah. No, the match, there was really nothing much to it. It was okay. It wasn't anything great. Let me ask you this. Would having Regal Benoit in this match, would that have been even more, regardless of where, we were talking earlier about Benoit being in the curtain jerker. Mm. Let me ask you this. Was it more opponents than it was placement on the card? Let's say for some weird reason, we have another match involving Batista and Flair, and Benoit and Regal face La Rez for the tag titles here.
No, I think it's worse.
Does that look like more of a deep push than what we got?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the tag division is low. I mean, outside of the quick Benoit Edge thing earlier in the year, and once Evolution lost the belts and it got on La Rez, it sunk a level. I mean, we've seen that over however many months now. And I think the only thing that had kept it going was those guys coming in. So maybe it would have elevated it a bit, but I think it would have felt like these guys are tag level. Whereas now, you could say, no, we're embroiled in a big feud with Evolution. Evolution is a top heel stable, and you know Benoit and Regal were the guys that were really screwed by them, so this is a big deal. So I think you could sell it better and argue that, no, it's not really a deep push. They're still in a high-level feud. I think them just fighting La Rez would have been a bad move.
Precisely. That's why that kind of helps prove my point earlier about match, you know, placement on the card is not as big a deal as, you know, who you're actually facing. So La Rez retains the World Tag Team Championships in a mediocre match against Rhino and Tajiri. All right. We've reached our main event.
Time to play the game!
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
And
If you want to hear this anytime, go to Brad Woodling's second anniversary PTBN favorites links, and this song will be right there.
That's right. I'm trying to wrap my head around the fact that when we get to, I guess it would be what, probably mid 2010, when he
still alive by the time we get there.
Yeah, exactly. When
it'll be
when
our
he's
PTBN's
not...
15th anniversary, Scott's 72nd birthday.
Welcome to episode 1,505 of the.
No, we'll still be on episode like 400 by the time it gets done.
Yes. How long that montage is going to become? It's going to be like.
Well, it's funny because I laugh because one of the books I read for my daughter at night is a. It's like a Where's Waldo, but it's like Disney princess stuff or whatever. And in one of them, I think, I don't know if it's Belle or one of them has. A candelabra is one of the items you have to find. So I always laugh when I think of the beyond the candelabra line. Yes. That we were saying.
Yes. All right.
I think of your love for Triple H is what I'm saying.
We all know what happened at SummerSlam. Randy Orton is your new World Heavyweight Champion. Defeated Chris Benoit in Toronto. Evolution thrilled. They have the belt back. The belt is back in camp. But is everyone thrilled, JR?
Oh, yeah. Everyone's fucking thrilled. So the night after SummerSlam, Randy Orton successfully defended his world title in a rematch with Chris Benoit. After the match, Evolution came out to celebrate with their champion. Batista hoisted Orton on his shoulders as Triple H was given the thumbs up. Moments later, Triple H's smile vanished and he changed the thumbs up to a thumbs down. And Chris Golo dropped to his knees as Batista was given the signal to drop Orton to the mat. Ric Flair and Batista proceeded to beat Orton down, and Triple H busted him open, telling him that Orton would have gotten nothing without Evolution. The following week, on August 23rd, Triple H demanded that Orton hand over the world title or pay further consequence. Orton proceeded to spit in Triple H's face and paste him with the title. GM Bischoff then announced this match for the pay-per-view. The following week, on August 30th, Eugene defeated Triple H in a SummerSlam rematch thanks to an Orton RKO. Finally, on the 9-6 Raw, after Orton defeated Kane in a steel cage match to retain his world title, Evolution came out and attacked Orton in the cage. So inevitable that Orton was going to turn face. It was obvious the way the fans were cheering him. Now, you had two ways you could have done it. And actually, three ways you could have gone, right? Four ways, I'm thinking. Not with the four. So, and they went the fifth, which is the worst. So the way they do it, I thought, made Orton look like a real pussy and completely kill this heat, right? So Orton's just this gullible goof sitting on Batista's shoulders like an idiot, and then it's all a ploy to turn on him and kick him out of the group. And now you're turning him face by default. So the fans didn't turn him. He didn't decide to turn himself. Triple H was the determining factor, which is a problem.
And this would be fine if the guy wasn't red hot with the fans. So think of The Rock turning face in 99 because the corporation decided to just beat the shit out of him. And I don't think that's what happened right before I go down this path. He kind of just turned on his own, right? Because the crowd was going nuts and they just kind of split up and exploded, right?
Yeah.
And like, they didn't, you know, Triple H didn't have Rock on his shoulders and Vince didn't give a thumbs down and then they kicked him
no.
out. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely not. No.
Okay. So, I mean, it was just goofy. Like, you have this guy that the crowd is really into and then you make him look like a bitch. He just beat Chris Benoit clean for the world title and then they turn on him. It was just dumb. So, the different ways they could have went, they could have just doubled down and did what they did with The Rock in 98. And just keep Orton heel, have them tease a face turn, and then go back even stronger level of heel. And by doing that, you turn on Triple H and take him out of Evolution and go on his own. You know, or lead Evolution as the top heel. Or you just make him go face on his own. You say, you know, Benoit showed me respect, and maybe Benoit gets in his head, and like, you don't need those guys. And then Orton's like, yeah, I don't need you guys. And he turns on them. And like, that makes him look strong. That makes him look like he stood up for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they dump him. And I don't know. I just thought they undid all the work they put in over all of 04, making him look like a top guy. All the work Foley did, all the work Benoit did, all the stuff with Edge, the crowd cheering him on. And then you just have him just get punked out. Like, worse than the worst of the Sting setups and turns. Even just super gullible and stupid. Like, he just looks so dumb sitting up there on Batista's shoulders and then getting dumped to the floor. It just didn't make any sense.
I will always say that, theorize that, well, we'll get to my theory after your match comments because they kind of go hand in hand. But yeah, he looked like such a chump there. Like, oh, look at this. Triple H actually likes me still.
Oh, it was dumb. It was really dumb.
I guess he does.
If they had to turn on him, maybe at least do it here. And cost, maybe like Orton gives Triple H a shot and you say, okay, here's a stand-up guy. He's giving his mentor the shot. And then Batista and Flair turn on him. And then it's maybe not as bad that, you know, Orton wanted to see the best in Triple H. He trusted his guys. And here he just looks so gullible and stupid. At least if you go into the match acknowledging there's a chance they may turn on him, you don't make him look as stupid, you know?
Or what you do is you have Orton, you have Benoit beat Orton at SummerSlam clean,
right?
And Orton kind of does the begrudging, all right, you got me. We have a triple threat here, yeah, at Unforgiven. Orton are kind of like what we do later on in the year at another pay-per-view. Orton RKO's Benoit, kind of like Armageddon 03,
right?
And then Triple H yanks him off and steals the pin, wins the title, and Orton looks at him like, what the frig?
Yeah, there's a million. I mean, we can, you know, sit here and come up with 50 ways that would have been better, yeah, than what they did. I mean, they literally chose the worst possible way.
Yeah, they did.
The only thing that would have been worse is if Orton actually handed him the title. Like, that's the only thing that would have been worse.
Yeah, if he didn't spit in his face and stayed a heel, yeah, but he would have been a bitchy heel.
Then he gave,
yeah,
him a full Chris Colo. That would have been the only thing that would have been worse. So the tone of the whole feud is that Hunter made Orton and that Orton's not on his level. So now you're burying him completely and making him look dumb. Right? I mean, the whole thing got over was that he was this cool, rebellious asshole, you know? And now he's just like this goofy loser that got dumped. It just makes him look so stupid. And all the stuff Triple H is saying, I don't know. You're only here because of me. I made you who you are. Blah blah blah.
Right.
I didn't care for any of it,
mm-hmm,
at all. So Orton smacks Hunter in the face to start, trying to show he's not intimidated, and then he hit him again and spit him. And I liked that. And the roles feels backwards though. Still, that felt like heel stuff from Orton. He's right. You know, slaps him twice and spits on him, like trying to intimidate him. The whole thing's just backwards. It almost felt a little bit almost like 2000 when they should have turned Kurt, Kurt
Triple
heel
H
and
Kurt.
Triple H,
right,
face. It almost happens again here, where a Triple H face turn may have been for the best. And he hasn't been face in a while now, so, I mean, it could have worked. So, Orton slugs away. Match turns into a punch fest, both guys trading punches until Hunter falls outside. Hunter catches Orton and goes to work on the leg. Orton blocks and yanks Hunter into the ring post. Hunter recovers and punishes the leg with a methodical attack. Very bland match. Again, you know, like the last one, kind of technically fine, but nothing that stands out. And Hunter's just picking the leg apart. The crowd's not involved at all. Triple H gets a lengthy figure four until Orton breaks, gets the ropes to break it. Orton hobbles back into it, hits a power slam for a near fall. We get the usual gratuitous, unneeded Triple H blade job with this style of match. Just completely not needed at all. It's not any. It hasn't been a brawl on any level. It's just been a match, and he bleeds for no reason.
Right.
Orton gets a near fall into DDT. Hunter comes back with a back suplex to break a sleeper hold. Orton comes back with a high cross body, and the match starts to pick up a little bit here. We get more counters and near falls. We get a ref bump. Orton hits the RKO, but there's no ref to count. Batista tries to interfere, but that backfires. Hunter hits a low blow. Coach comes out as the ref. Orton kicks out. Batista hits a spine buster. Orton survives that. Orton escapes a pedigree and hits an RKO on Coach. Flair tries to come in, but he gets an RKO. Batista goes to the Batista bomb, but Orton hits him with a low blow. And then Triple H just bashes Orton with a nasty chair shot to the head.
Yeah, yes.
And hits the pedigree on the chair to win the title. And just a complete waste of a title reign for Orton. They built up this big moment. They had him beat Benoit, and then he loses here. And the crowd just completely shits on the finish. And I think if Orton would have won here, after fighting off all of Evolution, you would have solidified him even more. Instead, you make him look like a bum.
Yep.
They kick him out of the group, and then they take his title. Orton, still in the growing stage, really needed the win bad here. Just a blah decision. It was a lazy decision. And I know what they were doing. They were going with the 93-94... you know, Luger thing, where you have Triple H get the belt here, Orton blows it, and then they build to the big WrestleMania rematch. And we'll chronicle it, but that's clearly where they were headed with this whole thing, that they wanted Orton to win it back at Mania, and that be his launching point. I say you already gave him a Mania-level win, and this goes back to the conversation we have, Scott, about modern-day stuff. Like, right. Not every big title win has to happen at WrestleMania. It just doesn't. And right. His win over Benoit felt like a big deal. Like, that was a Mania-level title win. He beat a highly respected, you know, big-time champion clean in the ring to ascend to the top. Like, that felt like his moment. And a win here over Triple H, after running off all Evolution, or even a DQ, this would have been better than taking the belt off him 3 weeks later. It's such a waste of a title shot. Why even bother giving him the reign?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Excellent analysis. Well, good points. I'm going to back up a couple of those. I still think to this day, and here was the point I was going to make earlier, but I wanted to talk about the finish first. I still think to this day that the only reason, and you may disagree with me on this because you may think that the company doesn't really care about the fans or the internet or anything. I think they simply put Orton in the spot because they wanted to have a transition so Triple H wouldn't beat Benoit and everybody would fucking turn on everybody.
I mean, you're probably not wrong. And I also think they wanted to have Orton beat the Brock Lesnar thing. We talked about that. They wanted
yeah, that
to become
too. Yeah.
The youngest champion. But you can accomplish that with that path you said, where you have the triple threat or whatever.
Yep.
You know, have Benoit retain and do the triple threat. Like, why waste the Orton run and make him look like a chump?
Yep.
Or if you're hell-bent on Orton being transitional, go with what I said. They set him up and turn on him at the show. And then at least it feels like I said, maybe if you build it where there's these two friends that are getting this respect match and Orton's kind of weary, at least he's aware of it. The fact that he's completely, you know, in the dark and dumbfounded and he gets turned on, to me, is what makes him look weak. That only works if he lost the SummerSlam match and they kick him out for blowing his shot, even though it's not really fair. Like, to me, that works. But he just won the world title. And it made no sense that he'd hand it over to Triple H. Like, just, I don't know. It was just really poorly executed.
It was. And the match is not good.
The match is all. I mean, it's just so boring. I mean, it's just,
it's dull as
anything. It's up there with Tomko and.
Okay, well, ye. It just felt like they wanted Orton to be. They were trying so hard, but they were overdoing it as well.
They were trying to try. It was on a platter for them.
Yeah.
The crowd wanted it. And then there's, oh my God.
And stupid. All those run-ins and then the coach coming in. I mean, it was tailor-made for him to come out of nowhere and win the. And I think the Portland crowd would have gone bonkers and they would have been like, holy shit, he actually just won this match.
Right.
They should have called an audible. Should have called an audible. And
I mean,
then
the audible should have happened after SummerSlam. I mean, they shouldn't have ever even gotten this far. I mean, this was stupid.
Right, right.
I mean, this is a guy that they were setting up to be the future, and the crowd loved him. Just keep him how he is and let him turn on his own naturally, like we saw with Austin and Rock. And they jumped the gun. They tried to. They had a guy that was lined up to maybe be the next Rock as far as, you know, the crowd turning him organically and making him a megastar. And they did it just one, you know, whatever. They did it too soon, and they forced it on everyone, and then everyone turned on it. And the guy that benefits the most is the guy they don't fuck with, and they let him, you know, and sorry, Steve Willey's kids, I've dropped at least 4 or 5 F-bombs here, but this whole show has bothered me.
you know, they forced it, and then the guy who benefits the most is the guy that they don't force, and they let him disorganically turn, and we'll talk about that. But it was there for them, and they botched it. They really did Randy Orton a very big disservice with these 4 weeks of booking.
Yeah, they did. They did. And I think that it takes him a while to rebound from it. In fact, we will document over the next 2.5 years probably that he never really recovers from it, and he starts getting a bad attitude backstage, and a lot of bad things come from this for Orton that I think derailed him for the next couple of years with the company. He gets good feuds, but he doesn't sniff a war. He doesn't sniff the main events for a while.
This completely put the nail in his face, Ron, because it makes him look like a loser. I mean, it really does. And it makes him look like a bitch. And we see that as he gets overshadowed over the next few months, that he just looks like a goof. And they took away everything that the fans liked about him. They took away all his arrogance, his cockiness. You know, it would be like if The Rock went completely bland in 99. And I keep comparing them because I feel like Orton had that potential pedigree. And they did what they did right with Rock, they just did wrong with him. They micromanaged it and made him change who he was, and it ruined it.
Yeah. Yep. And again, I think it as the year progresses,
nobody wants to like the douchebag frat boy because he's trying to be good. They want to like him because he's a douchebag frat boy. You know what I mean? Like, what they like about him is stuff that makes him bad. The rebelliousness, the spitting in the face, the not caring. Oh, throw me in thumbtacks, I don't care. I'm still the man. You know, when he's pandering to us and spoke to, you know, wants us to like him is when we're not going to like that kind of guy.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
He's not an underdog. He's this elitist jock who's like great body, great, you know, athleticism, you know, handsome guy. You know, it's like this guy that it's the guy who you're supposed to hate. And the only reason you like him is because he wins you over by being so damn good. And you have to like him. But when he wants you to like him, you're never going to like him. And that's what they hit here. That's the wall they hit.
Yep. Almost like mid-90s Shawn, to a certain extent.
Yeah, that too, right. I mean, everything we liked about Shawn and Diesel was that they were, you know, badasses. They didn't care. And then Diesel's a good comp, too. You know, everyone liked him because they didn't care. And then they made him this pandering goof, you know? And then it's like, all right, well, everything we liked about him is gone. Now he's just shaking our hands, and he's this big guy. Is he supposed to be, you know, are we supposed to feel bad for Diesel? I mean, look, he's 6'7", gray head of hair, you know, like all this stuff. It's like, why would we ever, you know, I don't know. We're not supposed to ever feel sympathy for a guy like that. We only liked him because he was kicking everyone's ass and he was really cool and he didn't care.
Yep. Yep. But at that time, it was not cool in the mid-90s. It wasn't part of the wrestling lexicon of booking to be that way. Now it is. So it's very, very weird. But in any event, here we are.
So show as a whole, I think, is actually a little bit better than maybe it's remembered for on the strength of those three matches. I mean, the problem is we have three very good matches, but then the bad stuff's like really bad. Usually a show like this, you say, is average when you have some good stuff and then some kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you have stuff as bad as we get here, you look for like match of the year level stuff to pick it up. I mean, like Tomko Stevie is legit one of the worst matches I've ever seen.
Yes, it is.
On WWE pay-per-view. The main event, awful booking and really bad match. The tag match, heatless. But the good stuff is just very good. It's not, there's no great match of the year level candidate to help pick it up.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's a decent enough mid-card, but it's not
right, there's some fun stuff here, but I don't know if it's, I don't know if the fun stuff is strong enough to offset the garbage you have to sit through. That's all.
Exactly.
So, that's, I mean, nothing. I'm going to rush back to rewatch.
No.
But
no,
I mean,
absolutely.
Like I said, the ladder match was good. The Shawn Kane, if you forget the storyline, the match itself in a vacuum is good, and the opener is good too.
So there you go. There is. I have 50-50 this. It's a C+.
Yeah.
There might be something you like. Might be something you don't like.
Yeah, I go even lower, I think. Well, not by much, but I just don't think the good stuff was enough to offset it.
Well, our original write-up, you gave it a C-. Sort
of. Yeah, I'm probably right around there still.
Yeah. So there you go. There is Unforgiven 2004. And throw it on the network, and maybe you'll like it.
Probably not.
Probably not.
All right, so we'll be back here in 2 weeks. No Mercy 04. But, Scott, I'll see you Sunday.
Yes.
We have Money in the Bank coming up. Mm-hmm.
as I what's it, who do you always say, is it Frankie Valli always says Columbus, Ohio? Is that the one?
Wait, what song was that again? I didn't even understand what you said.
Frankie Valli, right? Isn't that the guy you always say, Columbus, Ohio?
Oh, Frankie Williams.
Oh,
Frankie Valli's the Four Seasons.
No, that was Frankie Valli.
That's Jersey Boys.
Yeah, that's what I was
doing. It's Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Frankie Valli.
Yeah, the Four Seasons. I thought that was what you were doing.
No, Frankie Williams is the jobber that Piper
punched.
You didn't
like my Frankie Valli voice? I thought that was pretty good.
That was good.
Big girls don't cry unless you're a mentor.
That was good. No, it's Frankie Williams. Columbus, Ohio. It's the guy Piper punches on
the
first.
We're going to go out with some Frankie Valli in this one, I promise.
All right, good. Yes, that's Sunday. Looking forward to seeing you in the Cowboy.
Yeah, we'll be bringing some
bones. Oh, my God, what
games.
A crew. We're going to have Armento. We're going to have Rotella.
Oh,
this is going to be great. It's like Hell in a Cell of Misfits. It's going
to
be fantastic.
We'll have to,
and the
we'll have
guys
to do the balance beam of hair. We'll have the Rotella at the end, then Armento. Roger in the middle. G in the menu at the end.
Yeah. That's going to be great. Be good to see you, though. Be good to see you.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun. So we're,
and you had a nice pregame. Well, not saying pregame. I mean, obviously, your son's christening was an unbridled success, but you laid out the yard groundwork for what is coming in the month of July.
Yeah, so. I can focus now on St. Mary's. So, you know, yes. Past this one, I can start to get the mindset over the next couple of weeks where it'll be here before you know it.
Please tell me the chairs are still clean.
I piss all over them, so.
Oh, lovely. Then Roger can scrub them this time.
Money in the Bank, right. Quick. Who's your prediction?
For what?
Money in the Bank.
Kofi Kingston.
Is he going to win the briefcase?
And then on the 4th of July in Tokyo, Brock beats the shit out of him and takes it. No, I like that
idea, actually. He gives you the surprise on Sunday and then a big moment on the Japan. I like that. They should do that.
That would be hilarious. Who cares at that point?
The only time you come up with good ideas is when you don't even mean to do it.
When I don't even mean to do it. Does Ambrose win?
No. No. No, Rollins. Yeah. Rollins takes his title back, and I think Reigns wins Money in the Bank.
Ugh. Grief. Oh well. So there you go. And you and Will, you said episode 2 this week.
Yes, Wednesday night. We got some new games planned. It'll be a lot of fun.
Good.
Looking forward to.
Excellent.
Being back with good old Will from Texas. And then
speaking of, before we go, I've already gotten something in the works for another future special celebrity collaboration between PTBN and PWO.
All
I'll
right.
talk about it with you off mic, but it'll be something a lot of fun later on this year. So
looking forward to that.
Yes.
So we'll be back in a couple weeks. Until then, everyone, take care. Enjoy Money in the Bank. We'll catch you up on all the activities there next week. Kevin Kelly's show and Main Event will be back. We'll break mm-hmm. down what happened there and we'll continue the road to Brooklyn soon enough. So
that's right.
For Scott, I am JR. We are out. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
So it's not the Jersey Boys. It's more like the New England Men.
I thought it was a decent Frankie Valli.
I didn't say that. I wasn't sure who you were thinking of. And then talking about the jobber that Piper beat the hell out of, and then you Jersey boyed it. I'm very impressed.
Oh, Frankie Valli. I mean, they dragged him out. I was watching some New Year's Eve special a couple years ago. It was 4th of July. And they dragged
still
his ass out.
Jesus, another guy.
Song, and he's still going strong.
He still have the dark. He still dyes his hair dark. Wow.
Yeah, he still got the dark hair and still
it's like
got
Joe
the high voice. He'll never
like Joe Pepitone.
He'll be here till the end of time. You, him. Matt Rotella in a wheelchair.
Trust me, I've been with Rotella in a wheelchair.